Good morning, and welcome to the first quarter 2015 earnings analyst call. My name is Brandon, and I'll be your operator for today. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Please note that this conference is being recorded, and I will now turn it over to Mr. Brad Alexander. You may begin, sir.
Thank you, Brandon. Good morning, and welcome to FMC Technologies first quarter 2015 earnings conference call. Our news release and financial statements issued yesterday can be found on our website. I would like to caution you with respect to any forward-looking statements made during this call. Although these forward-looking statements are based on our current expectations, beliefs, and assumptions regarding future developments and business conditions, they are subject to certain risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from those expressed in or implied by these statements. Known material factors that could cause our actual results to differ from our projected results are described in our 10-K, 10-Q, and other filings with the SEC. We wish to caution you not to place undue reliance on any forward-looking statements which speak only as of the date hereof. We undertake no obligation to publicly update or revise any of our forward-looking statements after the date they are made, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. I will now turn the call over to John Crimp, FMC Technologies Chairman, President, and CEO.
Good morning. Welcome to our first quarter 2015 conference call. With me today is Marianne Seaman, our Chief Financial Officer. I'll discuss highlights from the quarter. Marianne will provide specifics on our financial performance, and then we'll open up the call for your questions. Earnings were 63 cents per diluted share for the quarter. Total company quarterly revenue was $1.7 billion, and operating profit was $235 million. Quarterly revenue for Subsea Technologies was $1.2 billion. This is in line with the prior year quarter and is a result of continuing to execute our strong backlog and healthy service activity. Subsea margins increased both sequentially and year over year. Our focus on execution has enabled us to generate strong margins in a seasonally weak quarter. For the full year, we expect to show a year-over-year margin increase as the execution momentum generated in 2014 has been maintained in the first quarter and is expected to continue. Although our full-year subsea revenue will remain close to last year's record level, our ability to execute has improved. Our focus on standardization, process improvement, cost reduction, supply chain, and rationalizing our workforce all contributed to these efficiency gains. As we continue to lean out the organization, we expect to further improve our cost structure throughout the remainder of the year. Our quarterly Subsea Technologies inbound totaled $552 million. As we anticipated, our subsea service activity remains strong. We did not announce any major awards in the first quarter, and smaller project awards were also low. This level of quarterly project inbound was not unexpected, as the subsea market is going through a period of project reevaluation. In this environment, with operators reassessing their project portfolios, award dates are moving to the right. There are some projects, however, that we still believe have a very good chance of being awarded this year. We expect to inbound at least $3 billion of subsea awards in 2015. This is based on our confidence in subsea service activity, as evidenced in the first quarter, and our expectation of awards supported by customer discussions that we expect to occur in the back half of the year. In our Surface Technologies segment, we're now experiencing significant declines in North American activity that exceeded the scenarios we discussed in February. Our fluid control inbound orders have fallen significantly this year. As this business does not carry a large backlog, the impact on revenue occurs quickly. In response, we have more aggressively implemented workforce reductions and continue to work with our suppliers to reduce cost and minimize the effect on our decremental margins. Overall, we're not planning for this market to recover before 2016. Our surface wellhead business outside of North America continued to deliver strong performance in the first quarter. Activity was down sequentially, but increased year over year. We remain confident in our ability to deliver annual results at or near last year's record based on the strong market position we've built, particularly with the national oil companies in the Middle East. Now, returning to the subsea market. Subsea project returns must improve to ensure the market's long-term success and growth. Our strategy specifically targets shortening the time to first oil, reducing subsea development cost, and increasing overall production. As earlier announced, our alliance with Technip and the creation of Forces Subsea, our joint venture that delivers vendor-based concept and FEED studies, provides a platform to improve returns. This alliance allows us to take the market-leading subsea production systems and SURF capabilities of each company and combine them in a way that was previously unavailable, ultimately offering cost savings that are both substantial and sustainable. With early involvement at the FEED stage, we can further drive product standardization and introduce vendor-based technology that cannot be placed within a traditional tender. In addition, we can also eliminate costly interfaces required when the two critical components of a deepwater development are managed separate and independently. We believe these changes reduce the overall costs associated with the combined subsea production systems and SURF scope by approximately 25 to 30%. We're confident these savings are achievable, as we've not only tested this on previously executed projects, but also on projects currently under evaluation. Reaction from customers has been positive, as both Technip and FMC are discussing projects previously thought to be uneconomic as likely candidates for studies using Forces Subsea capabilities. We expect that the first Forces Subsea commercial study will occur this year in 2015, and as a result, EPIC award could happen as early as next year. Another example of the industry challenging past business models is the unprecedented agreement by four operators to fund the development of standardized high-pressure, high-temperature equipment for deployment in the Gulf of Mexico. Even more encouraging is the level of interest we're receiving from other operators with fields requiring this new technology. More companies in the industry are recognizing the cost savings that are achievable through this unique collaborative effort to solve an industry challenge and will likely join this alliance. Looking forward, in the near term, we will continue to focus on execution while at the same time driving down cost and adjusting capacity to match lower activity levels. As a result, we expect to deliver solid margins as well as create a more efficient cost structure. Deepwater reserves remain a significant current and future source of the hydrocarbons that will be required to meet both increasing demand and offset production declines. The subsea industry, however, recognizes it must reduce overall costs to improve returns and enable operators to proceed with the development of their significant portfolio of deepwater discoveries. Responding to this challenge, we are now positioned to be involved early in project design, enabling the integration of critical development scope while further advancing technology and standardization to drive down costs. Marianne will now take you through some of the financial details for the quarter.
Thanks, John. Our Subsea Technology segment delivered strong results in the quarter, offset by both a steep market-driven decline in our North American Surface Technologies businesses and weaker results from our Energy Infrastructure segment. Subsea Technologies operating profit was $169 million in the quarter, with a margin of 14.6%. Operating margins improved 280 basis points quarter over quarter, with operating profit increasing 19%. Operating margins, both sequentially and quarter over quarter, showed continued improvement in execution while converting a strong project backlog. Subsea service activities met expectations despite lower activities in the North Sea. In subsea, we began to reduce headcount in the first quarter, where activity levels showed weakness. Over the next several quarters, we expect to further reduce the organization, where standardization drives efficiency and regional activity levels require more efficient operation. Moving to our surface technology results, surface technology operating profit for the first quarter was $63 million, a 28% decrease from the prior year quarter. Margins in the quarter were 14.1%. We incurred charges in the quarter related to headcount reductions and operational changes, which reduced the quarterly result. Absent that, our expectations for cost management and operating margins were essentially in line. Our surface wellhead business outside of North America continued to perform well as sales increased 13% quarter over quarter, with margins improving on continued strong execution, largely related to activity in the Middle East. The U.S. rig count has fallen by almost 1,000 rigs since the peak last fall. This has decreased our daily orders from pressure pumping activities significantly as customer demand has weakened. As a result, our fluid control sales fell faster than initially expected. We are also seeing significant sequential declines in our North American surface wellhead and completion services business. We are in the process of consolidating facilities within our surface technologies portfolio in North America. Independent of the current market conditions, we are focused on improving our position in shale. We are reducing our cost structure, integrated related services on the pad, and introducing new technology. These efforts are all focused on reducing development cost and the overall footprint while decreasing the time to first oil. This will help us protect our decremental margins in the near term while improving our competitive position as we further integrate our offerings. We have reduced our North American Surface Technologies headcount in line with volume declines. We will have further reductions in the second quarter as we complete the operational efficiencies to achieve our North America integrated strategy. Segment backlog exiting this quarter stands at $520 million. This is predominantly related to our wellhead business outside of North America, which continues to show strength. Energy infrastructure operating income for the first quarter was $3 million, with margins of 2.9%, which included restructuring costs. These results, while disappointing, were in large part due to delayed orders in the loading systems and measurement systems businesses still expected this year. However, execution improvements are required in the coming quarters to improve operational performance. Overall, in our segment operating results, we recorded $10 million of restructuring costs in the first quarter. We expect to record another $4 to $5 million in the second quarter for further reductions across our businesses. Let's turn to the corporate items. Corporate expense in the quarter was $16.3 million. We expect spending of approximately $15 million per quarter throughout 2015. Other revenue and expense net reflects expense of $26.5 million. Our first quarter equity compensation cost is higher than the remaining three quarters due to the amortization period for certain awards, and we also experienced higher foreign exchange losses. For the remaining quarters of 2015, we expect this to be approximately $13 million per quarter, subject to further foreign currency fluctuations. Our first quarter tax rate was 20%, which reflects the lower percentage of overall earnings subject to U.S. tax. We now anticipate our 2015 tax rate to be between 25 and 27% for the full year. Capital spending this quarter was $87 million, primarily directed toward subsea technologies. We expect capital spending in 2015 to be approximately $250 million, as expenditures will be lower through the remainder of the year. At the end of the quarter, we had net debt of $621 million. It is comprised of $695 million of cash and $1.3 billion of debt. We averaged 234 million diluted shares outstanding in the quarter. We repurchased 776,000 shares of stock during the first quarter at an average cost of $39.75 per share. Looking forward, we expect to deliver full-year subsea revenue that approaches $5 billion, with margins of around 15% as we continue to execute well and manage operational costs. Our subsea services revenue should continue to remain healthy despite slowing North Sea activity. We continue to expect revenue similar to prior year levels. Surface Technologies revenue is likely to be down approximately 25% from last year, given reduced North American market activity, with operating margins of approximately 12 to 13% for the full year, excluding the cost of restructuring. Energy infrastructure revenue will be down approximately 20% year over year, with margins of around 10%, reflecting improved execution. Orders delayed from the quarter are still expected this year. Operator, you may now open up the call for questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. We ask that you please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up question. To ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset first before dialing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. From Evercore ISI, we have James West on the line. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning, James.
John, question on you know, we talked a lot about subsea kind of standardization or conformity in the last few calls, and I know you're having many more conversations, you know, at the sea level with your customer base. However, back in 2009, we did have a lot of these standardization talks as well. Could you maybe just elaborate on how it's different this time, you know, or how much more the market is embracing this idea of standardization of equipment?
Thanks, James, for the question. You're right. The industry has been talking about standardization for decades, but there's been, for a variety of reasons, resistance to actually adopt standards. Some operators have been more successful than others, and I think it's where they have been able to standardize, they've been able to demonstrate better project execution and lower all development costs. In today's environment, and I don't mean today's oil environment, I mean the rising cost of deep water development with flat oil prices has for the last 3 to 4 years created an environment where operators' returns have declined. And that's the fundamental issue for the industry, is to reverse that. And all the conversations that we're having with major deepwater operators center around how they can improve their returns. And they all understand the importance of standardization. Not only does it improve execution, it lowers cost and lowers lead time. What's different this time is the determination by the operators to improve their returns and recognition that standardization is one of the best ways to do it. We see evidence of this in the high-pressure, high-temperature, 20,000 PSI equipment that we are developing for four operators. That is unprecedented in our industry, that four operators would agree on a single standard, a single part number. And the, right. The impetus behind that is their conviction now, unlike in the past, to adopt industry standards. The conversations that we are having after our announcement of our alliance with Technip are similar in nature, where the operators are very interested in how we can introduce standards early in the design and concept process. So I think there's a real movement, if you will, to adopt standards in a way that has eluded the industry for several decades. And we're now getting evidence of that. Again, high pressure, high temperature equipment is probably one of the best examples of four operators. And I think there will be more to come that will adopt that standard.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thanks, John. A follow-up for me, the alliance with Technip, I believe you mentioned, and if I get these numbers wrong, I apologize, but you know, the projects could lower costs by 25% to 30%. How much of this is coming from, say, the subsea construction part? How much is coming from, you know, the equipment, maybe standardization, or using, you know, a little bit less equipment on the seabed? Could you maybe break that cost savings out a little bit more? How much, I guess, is from just the lowering the timeline of the deepwater project?
The savings come from a variety of areas, but if you just look at the scope of the SPS and the SURF scope, it's about equally split. So just looking at the scope, you'd expect both scope would find opportunities for reduction, and it would come equally split from both pieces of the SPS scope and the SURF scope. So I think if you had to guess, it's probably just 50-50. But there are very specific ways that this alliance drives down cost. First, as I mentioned, the opportunity to introduce standards. When we're involved through the concept design stage, through the feed capabilities of FMC and Technip, through the JV forces, we'll be able to influence the standards that are established. We'll be able to, both Technip technology and FMC technology will be able to be introduced at the concept stage, which can significantly drive down cost. The other opportunity for reducing cost is the interface between these two critical scopes of subsea production systems and SURF. And this is in both our testing of this concept and these capabilities with past projects and projects we're currently evaluating for our partners, we've found significant opportunities, again, in that 25 to 30% reduction range, by actually eliminating hardware at the interface between SPS and SURF installation. We've also found opportunities to more efficiently install the subsea equipment, including the production flow lines, because we're managing the interface between SPS and SURF in a combined manner. So right off the top of my head, more standardization, faster introduction to new technology, eliminating hardware at the interface between these two critical scopes, and the opportunity for more efficient installation because the two pieces are being integrated.
From Morgan Stanley, we have Ole Slorer on the line. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. I wonder whether you could elaborate a little bit on these very strong margins that you posted in Subsea in the first quarter. You undertook quite some initiatives on cost savings and efficiency gains last year, and I just wanted to know how much stems from that and how much just stems from a different business mix here in the first quarter.
Ole, I'll start, and then I'll let Marianne get into some of the details. As I mentioned in my prepared remarks, execution played a very important role. You've seen over the last 18 months where we have been consistently improving execution, and it continues to improve. So I'd say execution was a big driver behind the strong margins. We are also, even though our activity level in subsea is staying up because of our high backlog, we've started to take a number of actions to reduce our cost structure, and some of that is starting to appear in margins. I think there'll be a lot more to come in future quarters. Let me ask Marianne to give a little bit more color on the margin performance.
Yeah, just in terms of the mix, Ole, we saw a pretty similar mix in the quarter, subsea services versus our EPC that we have, in previous quarters. You may remember this time last year, we did have two stacks down, and we incurred the cost associated with the recertification. Obviously, that didn't happen. But as John mentioned, a lot of this is really coming from the solid execution, the good work that's been done at these higher volumes, and again, the early work on headcount this time. So we feel pretty confident about our full-year margins in a range of 15%. You may think about the change from Q1 to Q2 perhaps not being as severe as it has in the past quarters, because our first quarter is typically our weakest. But again, mix pretty similar as it has been in prior quarters.
Okay, thanks for that. I was just trying to figure out whether there was a big boost in subsea service activity or something else that really changed the mix. But the follow-up question would be on the order intake, $550 million in the first quarter versus $3 billion minimum for the full year. I wonder whether you could talk a little bit about this step-up in activity, which is, second-half loaded. Is it contingent upon any particular project? Is it any region that is important? For example, new orders in Brazil. There's a little bit of color on the composition of the ramp in order intake.
Ole, our subsea service inbound held up nicely as we expected. It on a run rate, it looks for the first quarter, full year run rate, if we maintain that level, and we absolutely expect that we will, it will mirror what we saw in 2014. So somewhere in the $1.5 to $1.6 billion of subsea service, which makes up half of the $3 billion. Where does the rest come from? Some will come from smaller or less than $100 million orders. The first quarter inbound rate for those smaller orders was about half what we saw in the fourth quarter. We think that's the result of a bit of a stall or pause by the operators when they revised their budgets. There was a lot of distraction that first quarter. They weren't ready to proceed with some of the smaller projects that were on their list because they needed to get their budget sorted out. Although we did book several hundred million dollars of small awards in the first quarter, it was down from what we saw in the fourth quarter. And we expect that to get back up to more normal levels in future quarters. And then, as we said in the last call, this focus on returns, the downturn in the industry, the capital pullback by the operators has caused them to evaluate and reassess their planned deep water projects. And so we fully expect that these projects would move to the right and start to be awarded in the second half of the year. We have been targeting several projects that we are highly confident will be awarded this year. And it's the combination of those larger projects that we have confidence in, an increase in the smaller projects that we didn't see in the first quarter, and then the run rate for service, which we did see in the first quarter continuing, that gives us confidence that we'll at least do $3 billion for the year. In terms of projects and regions, again, all the projects are moving to the right as they're being reevaluated. Some of them will fall in 2015. Some will move into 2016. It's a little hard to predict right now where, you know, whether they'll land this year or move into next year. In terms of regions, we're not looking for much in Brazil. As you know, Petrobras placed their big multi-year contracts several years ago, so we don't expect a lot of inbound necessarily in Brazil. We expect the Gulf of Mexico to continue to be strong. The big projects in West Africa, we just need to watch the timing because they will have a tendency to move to the right. So I'd say Brazil a little softer, Gulf of Mexico should stay strong. West Africa will depend on the timing of these big projects as they get awarded.
From Barclays, we have David Anderson online. Please go ahead.
John, it's a question on kind of the margins and subsea maybe over the next 18 to 24 months, not necessarily this year. Particularly wondering about the backlog. As the orders come through and the pricing comes through, could you first comment on kind of how that pricing is looking on that backlog? And then as we think about 2016 with lower orders coming in, you know, how do we think about this? There's a couple of big projects I know you have in that backlog as they roll out in 16. If you could just give us some color on how you're expecting that mix to play out.
Well, just I don't know how material this is, but in the first quarter we reported another increase in margins and backlog. Now, fair enough, the inbound that we booked in the first quarter was relatively light, but that's 12 quarters in a row of increasing margins and backlog, and that makes us feel good. It makes us feel like the big backlog we've got, we're not showing margin deterioration. Now, we know going forward, as you pointed out, in the next 18 or so months, with the shift of major projects being awarded later in the year, 2015 being a softer year for subsea inbound, that there'll probably be more pricing pressure just in terms of the competitive environment. So I'd see there clearly is the potential for some softening of margins, particularly of maybe major projects that would be awarded. Now remember, at the same time, we are significantly reducing our costs, so the balance and the supply chain costs are also coming down. So how that actually plays out in terms of net margins to us isn't clear yet, but we should expect that there's clearly a chance and opportunity that margins will become a little bit softer as we go through this slower period over the course of the next 9 to 12 months. Now, we get back into 2016 and the subsea awards start to be inbound at a more normal rate. Hopefully, the margins would start to stabilize.
Okay, thank you. Another question, just getting back to your agreement with Technip, and I certainly understand the concept of standardization you've been talking about. But I think you, if I'm not mistaken, on the call that you had regarding this, that combined that represents around 30% of the overall development cost. Can you just comment a little bit on the rest of that, the 70% that you see out there, in terms of what you think are kind of the big stumbling blocks? Obviously, we're trying to figure out how economics improve, and you've been pretty clear about how that works in your business. I was just wondering how you're looking at the rest of the business. Where do you think the stumbling blocks are in terms of some of these projects going ahead?
Well, just to obviously every project is different, but in the ones that we look at, the 30% is as you pointed out, is the combination between the SURF and SPS scope. It's split evenly. The other big number, it's a big number in the sense that it's 50% of the overall development cost is in drilling. After that, it's less than 10% pieces, topside and so forth. So actually, the combined SURF SPS is the second largest component of a deepwater development. Now, what are the stumbling blocks? I mean, the stumbling blocks, in my view, is really the industry willing to accept and adapt very different business models. it just doesn't make sense to me. It's illogical to think that we're going to get 30-plus percent savings over a complete deep water development without doing something fundamentally different. And that's what is so, I think, so attractive to the operators of the force's capabilities. They understand that we can't just keep doing things the same way we've always done them and then expect some huge material savings, at least in a sustainable way. And so the reaction that we've got since the announcement of Forceness has been, well, extraordinary. Virtually every one of our partners and some of our non-partners have asked to know a lot more about Forceness capabilities, including identifying specific projects that they would like to apply the Forceness capabilities to either improve their returns or make a project that was previously thought economic, now economic, so they can proceed with the development. But they also recognize, and I believe this time, they're prepared, the operators are prepared in conjunction with Technip and FMC to try a different business model so we can exploit those potential savings. I think that's the biggest stumbling block, is that sort of mind shift, if you will, or mindset to a different business model.
From Bank of America, we have Douglas Becker online. Please go ahead.
Thanks. John, it doesn't sound like there's been any decline in subsea pricing yet, but you acknowledge the potential for some weakness. Maybe just for perspective, how much did pricing decline during the last down cycle, and is there any precedent for customers coming back and asking for a repricing of existing backlog?
I'll take the last part of your question. Historically, there hasn't been repricing of the existing backlog. Largely, it stays intact. There's been conversations about maybe how we can reduce cost. That's certainly particularly